the OTB Podcast Network.
Right, Neil Tracy, time for the Type 5. Good morning to you. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you doing?
Let's start with the Irish scrum. How well does the scrum compare at the moment with what we've seen from the Irish scrum over the last couple of seasons? How are we doing?
Well, I suppose I'm probably only going to compare it to what went on in the last in the 12 months since the World Cup as such, because pretty much up until the World Cup, the Irish scrum was actually, like, it was rock solid for about 4 or 5 years with the work Greg Feek was doing. But as we know, over the course of the last 12 months, things weren't really going too well with it. But it has been much improved now in the first three games of the Six Nations. Just one penalty given away from the scrum across those first three games. So there's two things I'm going to look at that have changed over the last few months in the setup. One of them is the setup of CJ Stander at the back of the scrum and how the second and back rows are setting up. So we have some pictures here. I can't actually see the screen as it's being put up live. So I'm trusting that the pictures, myself and Emma have talked this through and we know what pictures are going up. So this is the first picture. And we can see here, this is how CJ Stander is setting up at the moment for scrums. So I hope the picture you can see, and you can tell me if this is the one, is CJ Stander on his knees. So this is the game against Italy, 49 minutes, 47 on the clock. CJ Stander is down on his knees. And you can actually see that where he's binding on his second rows in front of him, he's actually coming in under their legs rather than, as you would normally see, binding around their around the side of their hips. So what Ireland have been doing for the last few months is that the Saracens model, pretty much, the Saracens model that crushed Leinster is kind of based on the fact that second and back rows are all starting out kneeling down on the ground. And then as the scrum, you know, crouch, they all get up off their knees together, as opposed to what a lot of teams would be doing, where their second rows have one knee on the ground and one kind of one standing up. So they just kind of step up off it. This is seen, this kind of all knees on the ground is seen as maybe a bit more stable, and it leads to a lot less reset. So what Ireland are starting to do now is they're having CJ Stander kneeling on the ground before the scrum is even set up and tucking his bind in under the second rows. Now, if we go on to our second picture, this is what CJ Stander would have been doing, or Caelan Doris, I should say, the, whoever was playing number eight. This is how they would have been getting ready for the scrum prior to this season. So as you can see there, he's almost in a kind of a squatting position. He's putting all of his weight right back, leaning right back. And what they had been doing was they were binding onto the hips like most number eights will be doing. But what Ireland seemed to be doing anyway was that they seemed to be pulling those second rows as close as possible together. I would have assumed the aim for that is they were trying to keep the second rows as tight as possible together to kind of keep their drive and keep their power going straight through. But what they've decided to do now is CJ Stander kneeling on the ground to start with and tucking in under. And that's probably just seen as a way of kind of keeping those legs closer together of the second rows as well. So that seems to have led to a bit more stability in the scrum in the opening few games of the Six Nations. But one other thing Ireland have been doing as well is the work of the second rows. So this was something initially was spotted. Scotland had tried this out against England in the opening game. Scott Cummings was essentially slipping bind off his second row. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go on to our third picture here, which is, you should see 47 minutes and 3 seconds on the clock in Italy against Ireland.
Yep.
So what is circled there, that is Ian Henderson binding onto the back of James Ryan. So that is just before they're getting set up. And even again, you can kind of see CJ Stander, if we want to just reference the last one, you can see how he's right down on his knees if you compare him to his Italian counterpart there. But what we are going to be looking at here is the bind of Ian Henderson. So you can just about see it's on the back of it is on the back of James Ryan. So this is what the loose side second rows seem to be doing on opposition ball. This doesn't seem to have been happening when Ireland have had scrums. Only seems to be happening when opposition have the ball. It's not even happening on every opposition scrum as well. It seems to be just in certain areas of the pitch. But I did check back. It did happen a couple of times as well against France. So that is where Ian Henderson is bound. That is a standard enough bind onto the back of the second row. As we know, the second row binds with one arm under the front row and then another arm across his second row as well. But then if we move on to our next picture, we'll see, we can no longer see Ian Henderson's bind there. So on the video, if you were to go to that timestamp on the match, you would actually see just before they crouch, you can see Ian Henderson just taking his binds, taking it off James Ryan and bringing it in under the front row. So what he is now doing is with his left arm, he's binding under the loose head prop, and with his right arm, he's binding in under the hooker. So he's not bound onto the second row at all. He's binding onto the two front row players. Technically speaking, that isn't allowed. If you remember a couple of years ago in the tight five, something we picked out from Peter O'Mahony was when he was binding directly onto the props rather than the second row. So law 19.7 says the locks bind with the props immediately in front of them and with each other. All players in the scrum bind on a locks, or all other players in the scrum bind on a locks body with at least one arm. So the second rows are only
bound. Are you snitching on the Irish scrum, Neil? Is that what, are you snitching on the Irish scrum?
A little bit, yeah. Snitching us out. So yeah, this is what Ireland have been doing. So on a lot of opposition ball, and essentially what it is doing, it is just kind of maximizing the power and stability coming in under the loose head, and protecting the hooker, I suppose, as well from the tight head who's trying to split that bind between the loose head and the hooker. But if we were to go on, then this is later on in the game. This is just another example as well. As you can see, this is just after Ryan Baird came on. So it's just kind of showing that this isn't specific to just Ian Henderson. This is clearly something they're trying to do. You can see that's the bind there, circle in red of Ryan Baird. And if we just move on to the next pick as well, just before they've gone in, that is Ryan Baird. He's just slipped his bind in into the side, and it's tucking in under the front row as well. So I suppose a little bit of dark art play, a little bit of messing around, a little bit of tomfoolery, but that's just a couple of things Ireland have been doing at scrum so far.
We love to see it. We love to be the ones who are causing the trouble for the opposition, and
keep an eye out as well in the next few matches as well. They've been tricky enough to spot at certain times in matches because of the angles, but I think when you play at certain stadiums, I think at Murrayfield, they kind of have that spider cam hovering above the pitch, and you get those aerial shots of the scrums. That's when you'll probably really be able to see it, and it'll be a lot easier to spot.
Okay, the Irish lineout, how's that been going?
It has been going good, particularly against Italy. So some things I want to look at from that Italy game, just in general, what's been interesting enough with Ireland so far, most lineouts won in the competition and most lineouts stolen. So good numbers, obviously, straight off the bat. But what was interesting, actually, in the game against Italy, 25 lineouts in the match. Only, this is just kind of going back to the way teams are playing at the moment. Of those 25 lineouts, only two of those lineouts in the Ireland-Italy game actually came from a team kicking the ball into touch in open play. Pretty much everything was just balls being kicked into touch from penalties. There was one where Keith Earls mishit a chip over the top and it went out of play. So I'm not really counting that. He wasn't aiming for touch whatsoever. But Billy Burns kicked one ball aiming for touch from open play in the 77th minute. Italy kicked one ball aiming for touch in open play in the 45th or so minute. So that was quite interesting. But also, as we always know with Ireland, they love to use their lineouts to attack and create direct scoring opportunities. Ireland's first five lineouts of the game directly set up tries. Now, I am including Ian Henderson's try that wasn't here because, like we all know, that ball was grounded. So I don't really think there was much more they could have done. But that was quite interesting because you're talking up until halftime pretty much, or into the early stages of the second half, that on each occasion Ireland got a lineout. They got over the line and touched the ball down off the back of it. So they were very, very clinical. And it wasn't so much the play calling, but the attitude. It was all about quick ball. For each of these five cases, if you look back at them, you're going to see the speed of the attack in the initial phases, in the initial rucks right after the line happened. So first for the Henderson one, even though it was chalked off, I think it's still worth talking about because it was a really good move. And you'd see the speed of the attack. There was four rucks leading up to the point where Ian Henderson dotted the ball down over the line. Three of those rucks lasted 2 seconds or less. So by the time the ball carrier hit the ground, from the moment that happened until the moment Jameson Gibson Park would pass the ball away, it was less than 2 seconds. So he deserves a lot of credit for being right up there as well and being right up on top of the players. And for those other further tries as well, There were a few phases each time. Most of those were in under 2 seconds. On the first one, though, if people want to go back and look at it, this was where it started, was the line had kicked into the 22 and Ronan Keller threw that. He went for the big overthrow that Robbie Henshaw ran onto the back of, if you remember that.
Yeah.
Well, what was actually quite fun looking back on it, you can see as the teams are getting ready for the line, as you can see Keller is standing up at the touchline and the camera zoomed in on him. And you can actually see as he's holding the ball above his head, he's not actually looking at his line at whatsoever. He's looking off to the left like that. So with hindsight, you can see he's absolutely just lining up Robbie Henshaw and kind of giving him the eyes. And what was good then as well is it all happened quickly. It was decisive and it was quick, because when you see the moment that Kelleher actually throws the ball, a handful of the Irish players are still actually only stepping into the line out. And the Italian players, it's all about the sell as well. The Italian players are all fixed on what the Irish players are doing. Nobody whatsoever is looking at Ronan Keller, except for one Italian player towards the back of that lineout. So the ball was pretty much towards the tail end of the lineout by the time most of those Italian players even had a chance to react. So when you're going for those moves, the sell is just as important as the execution.
Did we give it away against the Italians? Quinny in commentary was like, oh, I wish we'd throw the ball around a bit more. I was like, no, don't put anything on tape. Don't show anything more.
I don't think we gave away too much. Like, I watched the game back last night, and to be totally honest, like, the last 25 minutes of the match was a pretty tough watch. It was like both teams were essentially just going through the motions. I think Ireland had reached a point where they'd kind of released the shackles a little bit, and it certainly looked like they were holding a few bits back, because they didn't really look to kick on too much in the final 20 minutes, because I think they were happy enough with what had gone on up till then. But I think that's a kind of a move you can try out at some stage over the next few weeks as well.
Okay, England and Wales next.
England and Wales, and it's all about the English discipline. Look, I know the World Rugby, Joel Juk has put their hands up and said that Pascal Gauzer got things wrong with those two tries, but just England's discipline in general was something that you really have to look back on. In the 12 games they've played, I was jotting through things back this morning, in the 12 games they've played since the World Cup final in 2019, discipline has been a major, major issue. They're averaging 10 penalties a game since the World Cup final of 2019. And if you look back at the totals, it's actually just probably steadily growing more and more and more. So against Wales last weekend, they gave away 14 penalties. Against Italy in round two, they gave away 12. And against Scotland, they gave away 15. So that is what? 41 penalties across the opening three games in the Six Nations. Absolutely dreadful stuff so far. And even going back, like in the Autumn Nations Cup as well, 9, 7, 13, 5, 13, 10, 12, 6, 5 is their penalty count. 121 penalties are given away in 12 games, an absolutely disastrous record so far. But something I pointed out on Saturday as well, and I've kind of tried to mention it as well before, Maro Itoje, he gave away 5 penalties. He's given away 10 penalties in 3 games. They're not good numbers, obviously, but the man just has this ability. He's the Teflon man. Any other player in the world would have been sin binned long before he got his warning on his 5th penalty of the day. He's the kind of guy that on a normal day, he might give away 2 penalties when the average player would give away 6 or 7. There's so much the man is able to get away with. It's Richie McCaw-like ability.
There was one bit where he was on the wrong side of the ruck, holding on to about 4 or 5 Welsh players at the same time, and then made that tackle. And you're like, are you allowed to break away? Sorry, was on the wrong side of the mall. Are you allowed to do that? And then just after he'd been warned, which would have been a straight yellow at that stage. No, not even looked at. Totally fine. Because he'd asked the touch judge. And sure, look, touch judges never make mistakes. We know that.
Absolutely. There's an incredible just non-stick ability with him that it's kind of butter wouldn't melt in my mouth sort of thing, the way he looks at referees. It is like perfectly in line with what Richie McCaw used to be able to do. It's just knowing where the line is and knowing what the limits are. And almost being able to read the body language of the referee and you know what way he's going to move. It's an incredible ability to read people. But look, overall, discipline, a major, major issue for England. And you see it in any game they lose over the course of the last few years. They get on the wrong side of the referee early on and they just do not seem to be able to adapt to the interpretation that the referee is putting out. Most teams will spend the first 10, 15 minutes figuring out what way the referee is going to lie on certain things. Italy just seemed to, or England just seemed to go out with a game plan and a way of taking on rucks or offside lines or whatever, and they just do not seem to be able to adapt.
Neil, good stuff. We're going to leave it there. We'll keep the other two for later on in the week because we got into a deep dive there on the scrummaging techniques, and that was brilliant. So that's Neil Tracy with three of our type five. We'll bring you the other two parts of it later on in the week.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.